I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Like many of the best actors of his generation, Ben Gazzara got his start at the Actor's Studio in the 1950s. He went on to star in memorable Broadway productions like A Hatful of Rain and The Original Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Film buffs rave about his groundbreaking work with John Cassavetes on movies like Husbands and The Killing of a Chinese Bookie. In a new autobiography he's called In the Moment, My Life as an Actor, Mr. Gazzara shares what he has learned along the way and adds a few choice details of his romantic adventures with Ava Gabor, Elaine Stritch, Audrey Hepburn, and some other beautiful women. The book is published by Carolyn Graf, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Ben Gazzara to my show. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Leonard.
Now, this is not a feel-good book. Was there a temptation to do that?
Well, yeah. Well, there's a it took me 5 years to write this book. 3 years to avoid the truth, to try to finesse it. You know, you're trying to do that. Maybe
make yourself look good.
Maybe I don't have to say this. Maybe I don't really have to. And then the last year, I said, let it all hang out, and I let it all hang out. What I didn't want the book to be is a book about how my mother didn't give me the suit I wanted, and I wound up in psychoanalysis, or my father beat me up, and that's why I'm such a moron. And those books that bore the bejesus out of me.
Well, this is to some degree, actors will want to read this because it's also very much about the life of an actor.
Yes, the ups and downs, not only of the work, but of your life. I talk, of course, about severe depression I went through. I went through cancer that almost ended my career, and those are for anyone. That's horrible to live through, but for an actor, it's most definitely disturbing because you think it's over. You couldn't possibly continue. You
know? The depression came fairly late in your life, didn't it?
Yes,
so
it
you had no idea that you had a tendency to depression?
I got an inkling in 1980.
That's pretty late.
Yeah, that was late for me, and I pulled out of it rather quickly. I figured that was a romantic depression. I found a new woman. I was leaving a wife, etc. But really it wasn't. I think that was something that was laying there waiting to explode, which it did in 1989, ferociously, in the middle of the happiest time of my life. Mm-hmm. I was doing a film I wrote and directed and starring in on the island of Bali. I had the most beautiful wife in the world, and there you are. It was obviously waiting there in the background, and it was lithium and the care of a wonderful doctor that got me through it, and I haven't. Now you would think that cancer would be a reason to get be depressed, wouldn't you? Well, I got cancer in 1998 99. I did not have one moment of depression. I just put my blinkers on. I was determined to get well. And nothing was going to stop me from getting well. That's strange, isn't it?
Well, I thought that the depression had been triggered by John Cassavetes' death.
Yes, the one in 89, it started there. But then, obviously, it started there for reasons that were more complicated. It started there because I was seeing the end. It started there because with John, I had done some of my best work, and he wouldn't be there any longer. Would I ever do it again? Would my career continue? Would I be able to do fine work? Is it over? All that stuff, you know.
Well, you write that superstardom eluded you. Had you dreamed of becoming a big Hollywood star?
Well, all of us would like to be a superstar. Where the scripts pile up on our desk, we don't even have time to read them, you know.
But you almost, with your the beginning of your theatrical career, would have suggested that kind of an arc, wouldn't it? Like what happened with Marlon Brando.
That's right. I was on a roll, actually. My first three plays on Broadway were enormous successes. I said, well, how long has this been going on? This is too easy. But you know, everything ends. And I turned down a lot of pictures that I should have done. Because I didn't know how to read screenplays, quite frankly. The dialogue seemed so spare and uninteresting compared to the dialogue I was handling in the theater. You know?
Tennessee Williams wasn't writing movie scripts.
No, he wasn't.
But you didn't have advice from people who said, Ben, you take this and you run with it.
I didn't have good advisors at all. I was really stupid.
So to some degree, you feel that you sabotaged your own chances.
Yeah, well, I helped sabotage it. But on the other hand, how would I have survived a Hollywood life? Would I have survived it, you know? Then maybe the struggle is what has kept me alive, and maybe the struggle improved me as an artist.
Well, you write that, I'm quoting, it's a shame that at the moment an actor knows his craft best, he's often no longer in demand.
That's right. So, especially in motion pictures.
Because Hollywood's always been a tough place to grow old in.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, for women, it's impossible. Mm. For men, it's difficult.
How much have you learned about your craft? How much have you remained true to your early training at the Actors Studio? Do you still use the method as
Well, I don't know what the method is, really. It's a word that's bandied about, but actually...
They didn't say it at the time?
I never used the word. I don't like the word. Actually, the method, you might say, what is it for? What is it intended to do? It's intended to give you some sort of blueprint if you're stuck, if you don't know what to do. Methods of concentrating, of imagining, etc. But the method is no panacea for good performing.
In fact, I've spoken to any number of actors who didn't go through the Actors Studio who said, Ben Kingsley, for example, he said, you know, I use some of those techniques if I need to use them, and then I use other techniques if they work just as well. The most important thing is getting right.
Yeah, because, Leonard, sometimes the text itself carries you. You have to do very little work.
Like Shakespeare.
That's right.
They say, trust Shakespeare, and you'll always deliver the lines
correctly. If you can do it, yeah, that's right.
Had you done that kind of thing?
Oh, I wish I'd done more Shakespeare. That's one of my pet disappointments. But as a young actor, I did. I played Malcolm in Macbeth. I had a hell of a time. I handled it pretty well, too. Mm-hmm. Pretty well. But, you know, in my day, American actors were afraid of Shakespeare because we all thought you had to have an English accent to do Shakespeare, that you would never be accepted if you didn't have a particular style, you know. So, and by the way, it was true that our mainline critics were Anglophiles. A British accent meant you were a good actor, and often that wasn't the case at all.
Although nowadays all the young American actors seem to do perfectly fine British accents, something has happened. It used to be that the Brits only could do Southern accents because they never got the American thing right, and
the Brits are learning to flatten it out. The Australians especially, like Nicole Kidman, who I worked with on Dogville, had a coach with her at every second for the American accent.
Yeah. And she's astounding at it.
Oh, she's good. She works hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is my sense that theater was your first love. Yeah. So do you think that's one of the reasons that you had problems with the movies? Because
I think
many people are reluctant to even bother getting into the movies.
But it's a curious thing. When I was in the theater, there was a snobbery about doing motion pictures. Motion pictures were beneath us. Then when I got into the motion pictures, television was beneath us. And it's on and on and on and on.
And now it doesn't matter anymore.
Now it doesn't matter as well.
You were at the studio when Ilya Kazan testified before the House Un-American Activities Committee. Did that have a divisive impact on the studio?
Yes, it did. Well, you know, I loved Gads, Kazan. We called him Gads. He was so good to me. And, of course, he cast me in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And he was a fan of mine. And he would always take me aside, ask me how things were going. He took a really fatherly interest in me. So when he did that, of course, I was terribly disappointed and shocked that some of the membership were really violently against what he had done and wanted to resign from the Actors Studio, close it down, etc. And I said to myself, if you close this Actors Studio down, what are we going to do? Where will we go when we're not working? How will we learn our craft? Well, needless to say, nobody resigned from the Actors Studio, and it went on.
And many people who condemned Kazan later worked with him, like Arthur Miller. Same thing happened with Jerome Robbins.
That's right. Arthur Miller is the one who advised us all to resign from the Actors Studio. And then years later, he worked with him.
Because talent is talent. In the end, he could direct Miller like a dream.
Yes. Yes.
How
I'm afraid that Kazan Gadge was never the same after he testified.
Well, I remember when he wrote his autobiography and he came on the show, and he was really upset by the way every interview started with, you testified before the House Under Record Activities Committee. And although I think he really regretted having done that, came up with some official response to those questions, he had a long career that he could be very proud of. And he wanted people to talk about that as well.
Well, of course. Of course. It was unfortunate. It was a terrible time. I was a boy, you know. But I often wondered if they'd have, they were passing around the loyalty oath when you get a job on television. I got my first job on television when I was about 20 years old. And I was expecting them to pass it to me. And I wondered, would I have had the courage not to sign it? And there, but for the grace of God, go all of us.
Do you think it helped you that you grew up in what was then a tough neighborhood? East 29th Street. It's now a neighborhood anybody would want to live in.
That's right. It was tough, but it was soft. It was loving, too. You know? It was diversified. I mean, you had 900 mothers and fathers. They were all watching out for you. It was really not Hell's Kitchen or anything like that. It was more a working-class tenement neighborhood.
Well, how did you come upon acting in that neighborhood? You said...
Well, there was a boys' club across the street from where my building, where I grew up. You know, they used to have there weren't boys and girls clubs. There were boys' clubs to keep us out of trouble.
Especially with
after
girls.
After school at 3 p.m., they'd open at 3. And one... Jackie's doing a play, I heard, Jackie Passalacqua. So I went to see Jackie in the play, and he was good, and he got applause. And I said, boy, I'd like to try that. I think I could do that, maybe even better than Jackie. So I forced my way into that group, and in no time at all, I was getting all the leads. And I was dreaming of being an actor. Once I got that applause, I said, oh, this is my way off the corner. I think I found it. And I kept that to myself until college, when I started going after it.
Well, you write that acting gave you access to an emotional expression that you'd missed growing up in your neighborhood, but you never overacted. The emotional expression was always something that you kept very natural.
Right. Well, thank God. Mr. Sinclair, the coach, was not a fan of acting, in quotes. He didn't want you to do much. He would always say, don't act, you know. And he took us once, a group of us, to see Laura Taylor in the Glass Menagerie, and I had never seen anything quite like it in my life. When it was over, I said, Mr. Sinclair, that woman didn't do anything. That's not acting. He says, yes, Ben, she didn't do anything, but she did everything. It was an ingenious performance, and I never got it out of my mind. And that gave me the lesson of doing less. That less is more in acting.
It's one of the great tragedies that Laurette Taylor only did about 2 minutes. She did a screen test, and that's the only opportunity people like me have to know just what a genius she was.
Right.
Ben Gazzara has acted in more than 70 feature films and in hundreds of television programs. He's appeared on stage in dozens of roles for over 50 years. He's written a memoir called In the Moment, My Life as an Actor. It's published by Carolyn Graff, and we'll continue our conversation after we take a little break here on WNYC.
Thank you.
I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. My guest is Ben Gazzara, who's written a memoir called My Life as an Actor. It's published by Carroll and Graff. You've been romantically involved with many of your leading ladies in the past, including Janis Rule, Audrey Hepburn. Is this something that is actually one of the problems, or maybe one of the joys of the business? You kiss somebody and somehow, especially if you're a certain kind of actor, you actually believe what you're doing?
The danger of on location, I call it, you know. If you have an inkling of a problem with a wife in Los Angeles and you're in Bali with a beautiful actress, chances are things are going to happen.
And if she's and if her husband is back in New York as well.
That's right. So
it's just a matter of working closely together with somebody who
if that someone happens to be beautiful, charming, regal, talented, classy, stylish, intelligent, perceptive, like Audrey Hepburn, then you got a real problem. Because what happens is you start falling in love.
And then you come back home and what happens?
Then, that was over. Coming back home was not the problem. The problem was, what should I do with Audrey? She was married, living in Europe. I was in L.A., married unhappily, but living in the United States. Where could that romance go? So quickly, I got another picture in Korea, and I met a woman who I instantly was bowled over by, and that solved my problem.
But what about Audrey Hepburn's problem? I heard her, yes.
And I heard from friends later, and that hurt me even more when she said that I had broken her heart. I had not intended to do that. I was really surprised in a way that I had had that deep an impact on her. You know, I thought that much like me, it was on a non-location romance that could be quickly forgotten.
Do you think that one of the problems that that people working in that business have is that they're also fans on another level? You meet Audrey Hepburn, and you're not really meeting Audrey Hepburn. You're meeting the actress that you've seen in all those movies, the same as I might meet Audrey Hepburn.
Well, sure. It'd be like sitting to dinner with Greta Garbo, Norma Shearer, Hedy Lamarr, Carol Lombard, who you will. It was Audrey Hepburn, who is in that pantheon of the great divas in the history of the motion picture. Of course that has its impact, especially when she is the one who shows interest before you do. Then you're really hooked, you know.
Well, Janis Rule was
my wife.
Your wife
for 18 years. Yes,
I understand Janis Rule, Audrey Hepburn, Elaine Stritch, Ava Gabor. That she doesn't strike me as your type, Ben. Did I miss something?
I probably had more fun with her than with any of them. Quite frankly, she was delightful. Hmm. She gave me a respite of fun. There was no entanglement of love. And stuff. That was just pure pleasure. Yeah.
You seem particularly proud of the three movies you made with John Cassavetes. What was so special for you about those films?
Well, you know, when I started in the theater, I started a project called End as a Man at the Actors Studio. It was unfinished, unformed, really, and I worked with the director to finish it, to form it, to construct it, to get it.
You mean that you were improvising?
No, we were constructing the piece to make it whole, and working on my character to develop him. When I did A Hatful of Rain, we did that at the Actors Studio, the same kind of work. So it was the work I took great joy in. So when that work ended for years after that, until I met John Cassavetes, and there it was again. Creating together, walking the streets together, trying this, trying that, not taking the easy way out, and creating a life. And of course, he was a great director. He created a climate where you could do no wrong, where you felt you could do no wrong, where it gave you the freedom to be free. You were able to surprise yourself.
Well, we're hearing again about people workshopping plays. Tony Kushner does it a lot. Yeah. So that's what you're really talking about. That process is particularly fruitful for all people involved.
Well, yeah, I hate being an actor in quotes. You know, learning your lines, showing up, hitting your marks, and going home and forgetting about it.
Was his process similar to what Mike Lee does now? Actors all working on it, developing their own lines, improvising to a point where everyone agreed that there was a script, and then he films from that script.
No, John wrote a screenplay, but the rehearsal period, which would be 3 weeks or so, was devoted to rewriting, throwing things out, changing things, allowing us to improvise. If he liked it, he kept it. We got so used to each other and the material that it seemed like we were performing for the first time. But we knew the stuff inside out.
So is it better to work with people you've known for years? I would think on the one hand, there's a certain comfort level, a certain trust. On the other hand, there's the excitement of working with somebody you've never worked with before.
Well, sure. Listen, when I worked with Jenna, I did this thing, Hysterical Blindness, where we both won the Emmy for.
Jenna Rollins.
Yeah, it was like going home, you know. It always is. But, of course, I adored working with Nicole Kidman. I never worked with her before. At the time of my life, Lars von Trier and I, the director got along famously. So, yes, it is. It's exciting to work with new people who are talented. Talent is all.
Well, he's notorious, isn't he, Lars von Trier?
That's what I'd heard, but I got along with him famously.
Well, you have worked with a number of directors who have mixed reputations. Vincent Gallo, also Todd Solondz. Is that part of the fun, working with these cutting-edge kids?
Yeah, well, maybe I worked with the cutting edge of all cutting edges, with John and Peter Bogdanovich and the people in the theater, Gad Shazan, because they seem like nice boys to me. They didn't seem cutting edge at all. They seemed to me like guys who wanted to make a good picture. You know, I tried to help them do it.
My guest is Ben Gazzara. He's written a memoir called In the Moment, My Life as an Actor, published by Carroll and Graff. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Obviously, that title is about the approach to acting that you and the best actors seem to be able to pull off and others don't.
To remain in the moment, not to worry about the past and not to worry about the future, to play it moment by moment.
So that it never looks like you know what the next line
That's
is going
right.
to be.
That's right.
That's very hard to do, isn't it? Or is it something that once you get it, you just can keep on doing?
I think once you get it, yeah. It's a gift. I think age also is the best teacher. I think we get better as we age. The point I make in the book, isn't it too bad? When we age and know more than we ever knew, is the time when the roles are less interesting.
Now, you also tried your hand at acting, which is directing, which is another way of sharing what you know. You talked about suddenly being overcome by depression when you were filming Beyond the Ocean, not Beyond the Sea, which is Kevin Spacey's new movie. Did that movie turn out the way you wanted it to?
No. Of course not. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be once I saw it. It did get a release. It got mixed notices. It didn't go where it should have gone. And it didn't go where it should have gone because I wasn't there. You know, I was half there. And
somebody thinks you're somewhere else right now.
And half somewhere else.
That's right. So would you like to be able to direct again?
Yeah, I really would. I'm thinking about it. I have an idea. But, you know, it takes a long time before you write a screenplay, get it financed, get your cast together, get your producer. 5 years pass.
But you've done a lot of work in Italy. I would think that there are lots of people there who would be all too happy to finance a film of yours.
Well, how do I do this?
We're trying to find out where your cell phone is.
Oh, mine.
Yeah, that's what's going off, John.
Oh, Ben. How do I...
Okay. Yep, you stopped it. Okay. Did you like working in Italy? It's so different for an actor when you're actually dubbing all of your lines after you've filmed, isn't it? Don't they still shoot silently in Italy?
Right. That's right.
They dub in the dialogue afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know, filming without worrying about sound is a joy because you get the freedom of no boom shadows, no this shadow, no that shadow. And anyway, they dub everything into Italian, so I'm not doing the dubbing.
You speak Italian, I'm sure.
I speak Italian so that my mouth is going in the right direction when they dub me.
In a way, that's like making silent films. Do you wish that you'd had the opportunity to make silent films?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, some silent films are very effective, quite frankly.
Oh, they required great acting.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So now it's pretty much all films, isn't it? Can you see yourself going back on a stage?
Oh, I'm going. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you asked. You know, I did a one-man show last season called Nobody Don't Like Yogi, about Yogi Berra.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking it on the road. We're going to open in Boston March 1st. We're going to go to Scottsdale. We're going to go to Detroit. We're going to go to Springfield, Massachusetts, Clearwater, Florida, and maybe take it to places like San Francisco and L.A. Yeah.
And, of course, you also have the book tour, so you can kill two birds with one stone.
And tonight.
I'll talk about that. Ben Gazzara's book is In the Moment, My Life as an Actor. It's published by Carolyn Graff. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Larry.